And welcome back. We'll be talking about new beginnings for school children in just a moment. But first, here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following today. St. Louis Public Schools have been under control of an appointed special administrative board for about a decade. Today, the appointed board is resuming talks with the district's elected board about how to hand power back to the elected board. And Airbnb reports that Missourians are cashing in on renting their homes to people who want to see the total solar eclipse on Monday. The combined revenue for Missouri hosts who have bookings for next week is more than $500,000. Join St. Louis Public Radio this afternoon for local and regional news and throughout the day on our website at stlpublicradio.org. You know, the first day of school can be both intimidating and outright scary for children. The life they have known at home changes dramatically when they enter the world of preschool or kindergarten. Sometimes the experience can have long-term consequences, too. Parents should give some thought as to how to deal with these new beginnings. In this segment, we'll be talking about what parents should look for and what they can do when young children face the transitions. Joining me in studio is Steve Zolak, Executive Director of University City Children's Center and CEO of Loom Institute. Steve, great to have you back with us
again.
Well,
how are you, sir?
Well, a lot of kids are facing this situation right now. I don't remember what it was like, but I'm sure that I was scared to death, as a lot of kids seem to be.
Yeah, I think that you really launched into the right place. We really need to think about what was it like when we made that first transition. And we will often feel that transition and react a couple different ways, either do something completely opposite or do exactly the same thing. And I think that is the first step for preparing a child for a transition, to be empathetic to what they could be thinking about making that adventure.
What do you see at your institution with regard to these new beginnings?
Well, and it is really all over the place. Mm-hmm. And I think, first of all, it all starts with relationships. And what's the relationship between the parent and the child? There is something that we have to understand about children, that everybody has a different kind of a temperament. Mm-hmm. We have children who come in who are really feisty, and that's who they are. You have children that are a little bit more fearful and slow to warm up. That's who they are. And then you have the kid who is just pretty flexible, and they just roll with the punches. And when you pair that up with whatever the parent's temperament is and the teacher.
I was just going to say parents, obviously important, and we'll get back to that. But the teacher has to deal with all of this, and that's a terrific responsibility.
It is. It's one thing when a teacher, when there's one-on-one with a parent and a child, or a two-on-one with a parent and a child. But when a teacher is receiving 18, maybe 20 children all the same day, it becomes incredibly challenging for the teacher. And I think we're at Loom Institute, we're really working on how to build a teacher's resiliency about receiving children. And when children walk into the building, they need three things. They need a real sense of belonging. They need a sense of appropriate power, knowing that they're going to be powerless in this new environment. And they absolutely have to understand that they're going to be loved and cared for. So,
do they really understand they're going to be powerless? I mean, we're talking 3-year-olds, 5-year-olds, perhaps.
Oh, absolutely. I think about a 3-year-old going into a new environment. If it's their first experience in preschool, they've been home. They've been maybe with some small groups, and all of a sudden, it's like a tsunami of others. And then they have to listen to one or two teachers, maybe three teachers, other voices, and they may not be in concert. Mm-hmm. So for a 3-year-old starting a school for the very first time, and they have to navigate their friends, they have to navigate the teachers, they have to figure out where the bathroom is. And these are enormous thinkings for a 3-year-old.
Well, let's hope for the teacher's sake and for the sake of the other students, they find that bathroom very, 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 very quickly. How long does it take generally for these youngsters to kind of feel like they're fitting in and get into the groove, so to speak?
I think there's an interesting paradox. When an adult starts a new job, there's usually some holding period for about 90 days. And I think there's some truth to a child starting school for the first time. It's 3 to 6 months of getting into a rhythm. You know, if you think you're going to go into a job and all of a sudden you get it in the first or second week, it's not going to happen. You have to understand the culture. You have to understand the behaviors. There's a lot of things for a child to put together. And so often a child will come into the school environment and they think, this is wonderful. And then 3 weeks into their experience, they're like, okay, enough. Let's go. Let's go back to the way it was. And you will often see some regressive behaviors there. So,
what can parents do in advance of this event to kind of get them ready? Is there any kind of formula that you can give us?
Well, I think there's some real clear things to do. If it's the first experience form, you know, drive past the school, even if they're young infants. You begin to have dialogue with an infant or a toddler or a preschooler. Here's where you're going to go to school, and if nothing else, it's supporting your understanding that you're going to be letting your child go, because that's another piece of this. How do I let my child go? But to drive past the school, do visits, as many visits as you feel the child needs, or as many visits as you need. And that is a really key piece. You take pictures of the school. You start bridging school and home and school.
Well, you're encroaching on the school's turf. If you're going to be popping in on a regular basis, you have to make arrangements, don't you, to allow the parent to kind of show up and show the kid around?
I know at University City Children's Center, if a parent wants to come in at any time, they're welcomed. And I think that really, particularly in those first few months, to allow the latitude for a parent to come in, because they need to have the comfort. If they're coming in, it may not be about the child. It may be about the parent. If it disrupts a child's day and there are too many separations, which could be a challenge, that begins the partnership between you and the parent. So with those experiences, we are bolstering the family, we are supporting the family, and we're getting to know the parents differently.
Well, it's one thing when the child is enrolled in the school and is already a student there, but what about beforehand? You had indicated that, you know, perhaps if you can get the youngster with the parent of the school before they actually start, that would be helpful.
Right. So, we always recommend if a child is enrolled in the school that there has to be some play dates and before they start. So you would let the child come in and start getting the flavor for what it's like being a group with the parent there. And we would encourage the parent, go out of the room and get a cup of coffee for a minute and see how the child does, and know that the parent will come back. So that going away, coming back is actually a very important concept for children.
I understand, what you do at your school, which is an exceptional one, and everybody knows that. But do these same rules and procedures apply, would you think, to public schools and urban, suburban areas?
Well, yes. We would get some pushback, particularly in some of the public sectors, because there is and I actually have been told when my children were young, they say, you're disrupting the learning. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm part of the learning, so I would challenge that. I do think I do think that schools, if they have particularly pre-K and K programs, that there should be a system for allowing parents to come in and visit. And again, it is everybody getting to know each other, particularly in those first 3 months. And so we're asking teachers to give children a sense of belonging, a sense of power, and a sense of love. Parents also need to get that from the administrators. How do I give you a power, love, and belonging over your precious?
You mentioned something a moment ago, Steve, that we should address if you can. I mean, you look at it from the student's point of view, but you mentioned the parents. There's an empty nest, the first of the empty nests in many cases, where the parent suddenly finds herself or himself or both of them at home without the dear little one.
Yeah, and that is – and again, it goes back to the very initial concept of transitions. Mm-hmm. How did you as a child handle transitions? What's your temperament around it? And we often have to give some special hands-on care. So if you have a toddler, an 18-month to 2-year-old, and you're dropping them off, and the parent is reluctant to leave, and you know that it's not serving the child, and intervene and encourage the parent to turn. say their goodbye, turn, hit their heel on the ground hard, and take that first step, get out of the room. We will nurture you on the outside of that classroom. And often you'll find tears and some real sadness. And again, it speaks volumes about what we need to do and do as a school and our responsibility to not just the children, but to the family.
I still come to the point where we're talking about schools that have hundreds, maybe even 1,000 or more students mm-hmm. being able to be attentive to things like that. I mean, you're in a different category. Yeah.
Well, yes. But in so many ways, it doesn't matter. We have to educate schools because this is what families need. When you open the paper and read the news of what's going on in schools, it's not always encouraging. So we need to take a different approach. And we've tried to drill to the head of children. We tried to be autocratic with families. And now I think it's time. The season is now. Brain research, everything tells us it's all about relationships. It is all about relationships.
And I suppose if we look into the not too distant future, we'll be also talking about more and more young people getting into preschool environments. I mean, that everybody, as you say, everybody agrees that this is really something that's very important to do.
Yeah, and as we ramp up the access for children in early childhood programs, we must stay anchored in quality and what are the quality standards. And we know by the research that children, in order for them to be academically ready and to learn, they must be emotionally grounded. They must have emotional partners, and again, it's in the research, particularly pre-5, pre-K research, that 90% of the brain is developed by 5, and we can have an impact in those first 5 years of life. Not to discount what's going on in the brain as children get older and how they can reconfigure things, but if we're going to make a deep impact and we're going to If we want to change society, we must change the way we're teaching our youngest children. So having a cattle call for preschoolers is not acceptable. It's not acceptable.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned earlier, obviously, what parents can do prior to the youngster actually attending the school. But what about this up to 6-month period following enrollment? What can parents do and should parents be doing during this period of time?
Going to work. Having a cup of coffee with a friend? Uh-huh. No, it is staying connected with the school, that if we think about how the vital nature of pre-K from birth to 6 years of age, that piece of education, that is a lifelong investment. And we'll often have families will say, oh, when they get to big school, that's when I'll get involved. Mm. This is it. And from a developmental perspective, children need you as an emotional partner. As they get into elementary and move their way up, they don't need you. If you've done your work, they don't need you the same way. And actually, they don't even want you sometimes. So we have some of our school chemistry mixed up. So let's reconfigure the formula. And, you know, in Finland, if you want to be an early childhood person, you're one of the most revered professions in our country. You know, in Missouri, 18 years of age, you have to be free of TB and not be a drug user. I mean, come on. So yeah. There's a lot that we need to think about in the field.
Well, what I was really trying to get at here was the that initial period when the youngster is starting school for the first time. What should parents be looking for to make sure that adjustment is happening and happening properly? And then what can the parent do to ensure that?
Well, you know, first of all, sleep is a critical piece for children. How do you get on some routines and something that's predictable? And that can be really challenging for families. So first of all, before they start their school for the first time, to begin getting into a predictable, systematic approach to sleep time, eating time, and begin to roll into that. And as the child starts school, to begin to watch for signs, sleep disturbances, eating disruptions, fragility, go to tears fast. Now,
acting up. I guess, is part of that.
Yeah, and all of that is very appropriate because you disrupted the life. And what we have to do is stay really anchored in it, put it, connect the dot on it, and allow it to play itself out and give it some more time. Mm-hmm. But having conversations with the teachers, and you'll often find that the conversations with the teachers, the kids, the parents, are, the teachers are saying, oh, Johnny is wonderful. And so what children learn how to do is hold it together in the external world and come home and regress, and it's all hell breaks loose. But that's what children need us to be, their emotional partner in those moments. They need us to hold their feelings, not blaming it on the teachers or the school, hold their feelings and frankly love them in spite of the mischief that they're getting into. Particularly if it's out of the norm.
Yeah. Kids are subjected to so many varied impulses these days. And I'm thinking primarily of the electronic gadgetry that is used as babysitters at times and toys and what have you. Are you seeing any impact of this digital age on these young brains and young minds?
Oh, we have about 3 hours. We could really dig into that. That is a real serious concern. Mm-hmm. We know that childhood is changing, and what the sad part is, people are accommodating the childhood, the changes in childhood. Children do not need laptops. They need laps. No matter how childhood is changing, children still need to be supported emotionally, and they need emotional partners as they ramp up their thinking, and they will understand the technology pieces. Now, I have a grandson that lives in Seattle. Yes, we Skype and we do those things. But when we are face-to-face, it's electronic shut, phone off, and we play and sing and dance. And we need to really eliminate a significant portion of the electronic gadgetry that children are experiencing.
What do you think the consequences of this are likely to be, unless it's addressed?
It's really about relationships. How do you want children to relate to the world? And you know, electronics are going to be a part of it. But it'll be a much better part is if they have a solid human relationship. Mm-hmm. And I think we will have, you know, when we look at the mischief that's being created through hackers and all of those pieces, I think we have some challenges ahead of us with it.
Well, yeah, and we're at the very early stages of this too, so Lord knows where it's going to be going. Okay, let's talk about an event that I know that you're very happy to be involved in. You've got a benefit concert coming up. I believe the title is Fairy Tales Can Come True.
Yeah.
Can they really?
I tell you, I think with all the supporters of Tulum and University City Children's Center, we are making hundreds of children's fairy tales come true. Mm-hmm. We're focusing this year. It's at the Caramel Room on August 17th. The thing about this one is we are we're really calling it the theme is the Year of the Teacher. We really want to honor teachers, and we're going to be honoring four unique individual teachers who have presented applications and proposals to do something that we think has national proportions. Mm. Each teacher, they're going to receive something more like a sabbatical, which is unusual for our world of early childhood. Mm-hmm. And it's not a year-long sabbatical, but they will get a week off to study and work. They will get a stipend of $1,500, have an expense account to execute on their project, and get technical support to make the project real. So the exciting thing is that we're elevating early childhood. We're elevating the essence of what teachers are about and valuing teachers and their thinking and their studying about children and understanding kids so they can export it nationally.
Who is invited to this event?
You? No, it is open. We have tickets available on our University City Children's Center website, uccc.org, and go to the Give, and you'll see our Fairy Tales Can Come True drop down. It's a beautiful event. We have Aaron Bodie.
I
I see that.
Aaron Bodie, a woman named Janice Martin, who's a concert violinist who plays while she's doing her aerialist work. Dan Rubright, Melissa Brooks, John Magrosso, and our feature is Zoe Baldwin, who's a former student at University City Children's Center, who's 8 years old, and she's coming back to play violin for us.
Her father is with the Ariana String.
He's with the Ariana String.
Well, I should point out that this, you mentioned the Caramel Room, but it's the Caramel Room at Bissinger's Chocolate Factory on Broadway downtown. Yeah. That is likely to bring quite a crowd there.
It is all about chocolate. Chocolate and children. Come on.
Well, congratulations to what you do, Steve, at your institution, and best of luck as you have this new crop of youngsters coming in this year, and thank you for telling us how to deal with that for those
thank
of us
you,
who
Appreciate
have
it.
To. Always good to see you. That's Steve Zwolak. We continue by saying that archived versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.